So today's this week's parsha is really the largest parsha in the Torah when they're both together. Parshas Matos and Masai, which are Mechubarim, are very, very large, and this of course finishes Chumash Bamidbar. But I want to talk about actually a mitzvah that appears in the second of the two parshios, and this is a Machlokas Rishayim, if it is a mitzvah. If you look in Parshas Masai, which is the last parsha in the book of Bamidbar, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu to tell to Bnei Yisrael that these are the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, and the pasuk says, "V'rishtem es haaretz, you shall inherit the land, v'shaftem ba, and you shall dwell in the land." According to Ramban, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, this is a permanent mitzvah. This is not just a commandment for that generation, but this is the mitzvah d'oraisa called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, living in the land of Israel. According to Ramban, this is actually a mitzvah min ha-Torah. Where does the Ramban say this? You know, the Rambam wrote Sefer HaMitzvos, a brief description of mitzvos, and at the end of the Sefer HaMitzvos, the Ramban writes mitzvos that he felt that the Rambam forgot to count, or didn't count. And Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is one of those that were not counted. Now you understand that this issue of counting mitzvos is a very complicated issue, because if we have a Messiah from Chazal, that there are 613 mitzvos, 248 positive and 365 negative, every time you add a mitzvah to the list, you have to take off a mitzvah to the list. So the Ramban doesn't come up with 614 or 618. He adds four or five mitzvos, but he also takes away mitzvos as well. And usually the way they're taken away is not so much by not making it a mitzvah, but by making it part of another mitzvah. In other words, it's very rare. This is actually one example where Rambam says it's not a mitzvah, Ramban says it is. But usually when you have these types of machloksim, it's simply a question. Both people will say it's an obligation, but is it counted as a separate mitzvah? So Ramban says there's actually a mitzvah min haTorah called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And that applies, the Ramban says, even Bizman Hazeh, even when there's no Beis HaMikdash, even if there's no king, it does not depend on any of those conditions. Now, what does the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael mean? So the Ramban actually says that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael has four components. There are four subdivisions to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Subdivision number one is, there is a mitzvah min haTorah for the Jewish people to conquer, if necessary, all lands that is within the Torah's boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. This is a mitzvah of conquest. Now, if you look at the Torah's boundaries, again, it's not so certain, the descriptions are not so clear to us, but the halachic boundaries of Eretz Yisrael are much larger than the political boundaries of the state of Israel. The Torah says, quite literally, that Eretz Yisrael goes from the Euphrates River in the north all the way to the Egyptian River in the south. Now, there's a machlokas. What is the Egyptian River? Some say all the way to the Nile, and some say to the Wadi El Arish, which is the Sinai, but it is much bigger. And according to Ramban, therefore, we would not be talking about giving back the West Bank. We would be talking about conquering the East Bank, because the East Bank of the Jordan is the land of the 2.5 tribes. That's also part of Eretz Yisrael, that is Aver LeYarden. Now, it is true that there are some parts of the state of Israel that are not Eretz Yisrael, too. In other words, what I'm saying is, there is much which is not in the state of Israel that is Eretz Yisrael, and there's a little bit of the state of Israel that's not Eretz Yisrael. For example, most opinions say that the city of Eilat, popular vacation resort, does not have Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Many opinions say that in Eilat you have to keep two days of Yom Tov, because it's considered to be Chutz Laretz. Of course, a city like Eilat needs the kapara of an extra day of Yom Tov, because it's so unfortunately corrupt in so many ways. Shouldn't go to Eilat. Although they tell me that the fish are very, very beautiful. You can go in a glass-bottomed boat, and you can see all sorts of unusual fish in the Red Sea and the like. But most of the time it's the other way around, that Eretz Yisrael, Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, is larger than the political boundaries of the state of Israel. And according to Ramban, there is a mitzvah upon us to conquer that territory. That is component number one of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Component number two of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, right, these are subdivisions of this mitzvah, is that even when we have conquered it, there is a mitzvah to inhabit it by not letting it abandoned, meaning you cultivate it. You either turn it into a place where people live, or industry, or agriculture, or recreational, or parkland. You don't simply leave it desolate, empty, and abandoned. It's not enough to say, this is Israeli land, and we'll just build a fence around it. You have to do something with it. And according to this, the Mefarshim say that every effort you make to beautify the land of Israel makes it less desolate, and you actually have a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So if you pick up garbage here, you are Mekayim Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now this mitzvah you could even do from afar, even if you live in Chutz Laaretz. If you contribute to the Jewish National Fund, which plants trees in Israel and the like, you are fulfilling vicariously a certain aspect of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now then there's component number three, right? So first component is to conquer. Second component is to beautify or make more habitable. The third component would seemingly not make sense except in light of later history. So it's almost as if the Ramban was a prophet. And that is, it is forbidden for any Jew, no matter where he lives, even if you live in Chutz Laaretz, it is forbidden for any Jew to regard any other land as the homeland of the Jewish people. So even if you live in New York, you cannot look at the United States or New York as the Jewish home. You have to picture and feel that Eretz Yisrael is the national homeland of the Jewish people. Now, the question is, like, who wouldn't think that? I mean, even people who don't live in Israel, they understand that Eretz Yisrael is the homeland of Am Yisrael. But, you know, it's very, very interesting that when Theodor Herzl started what we would call political Zionism, you know, modern secularist Zionism, in the 1890s, again, the idea of praying for the return to Eretz Yisrael, we've always had in our tefillos, but he kind of created the political Zionist movement in the 1890s. So at one point, because he was having difficulty negotiating with the Ottoman Empire, Turkey, which controlled Palestine at the time, he was willing to consider Uganda as a place for the Jewish state. He was willing to consider Uganda as a Jewish state. Now again, I don't want to make fun of him, because remember, Herzl's dominant motivation, Herzl was not religious. Herzl knew nothing about Yiddishkeit, although he looked kind of messianic with the long beard. But Herzl wanted to find a solution to European anti-Semitism, meaning he saw that Jews were, this was in the 1890s, this is way before the Holocaust, that Jews were discriminated against, Jews were falsely accused of crimes. You may recall that Herzl was a journalist for a Viennese paper, and he was reporting on a very infamous trial in the French courts involving Alfred Dreyfus. Have you heard of something called the Dreyfus Affair? An interesting story. Alfred Dreyfus was an officer in the French army, and he was accused of treason. And he was sentenced to a life sentence in Devil's Island, which was a really bad place to be. And it was very, very apparent to most impartial observers that this was a trumped-up charge, this was an anti-Semitic trial, that Dreyfus was, in fact, not guilty of anything. And Herzl saw, for the first time, the tremendous, tremendous hatred and anti-Semitism that the Goyim had for the Jews. So Herzl's solution in his own mind was not Torah and mitzvos and tshuva. That was not his thinking, that was not his knowledge, but it was, if only the Jews have a country like every other nation, we have our own government, we have our own army, We have our own way of doing things. We know we're no longer wandering from place to place. Then we will be respected, and then we will be admired, and then we will take our place in the world, just like the Germans in Germany, and the Italians in Italy, and the French in France. We will be a co-equal nation. So according to Herzl, Zionism was predominantly a solution to anti-Semitism in two ways. By getting the Jews out of the European countries, so they're not there. You can't hate them if they're not there. And number two, by giving them their own country that would give them respectability. Now, because of that orientation, for Herzl, it didn't make a difference if it was Israel or some other country. So, l'shitaso, as we say, Herzl was quite willing to entertain the idea of Uganda. In fact, there were other proposals. At one point, Stalin, this was later, of course, after Herzl, in the 1920s, Stalin was willing to give the Russian province of Georgia, not the U.S. state, as a Jewish state. And there was even a proposal, I don't know how many Jews you could fit on it, for Galveston, Texas. You know, Galveston, Texas is an island. Now I think it's connected to the mainland with bridges. But Galveston Island, there was some consideration of making it a Jewish, a Jewish island. I don't know exactly how many Jews you put on a Jewish island. But there were these proposals. So what the Ramban is saying as a prophet almost is that no matter where you live, maybe you live in Chutz Laretz, that might be fine, but you're not allowed to look at any other place as a national home for the Jewish people. Only Eretz Yisrael is the national home. Yeah?
Just two quick things. I have to ask, did Herzl have specifically anti-religious kavanas in his idea, or just...
No. Herzl was simply ignorant of religion. In fact, to the degree that Herzl knew anything at all, he thought religion was a benign, good thing, as long as it wasn't too fanatical and didn't get involved in politics. One of Herzl's famous quotes: Herzl was not a hater of religion. He didn't know enough to hate religion. Now, some of the early Zionists who came from religious homes, they had a different orientation. They were rebelling against the Torah, but Herzl was not rebelling against Torah. Herzl didn't know anything. Didn't know anything at all.
And then, just secondly, for the Ramban, so like today, a lot of Jews in America say, you know, I'm Jewish and I'm American. So yeah, the Jewish homeland might be Israel, but I'm American, so my home is America. So is the Ramban saying that would be us also?
Well, we'll see. I'll get to the fourth thing, which will make it us. Yeah.
I'm wondering that if with all of the shiloh of things that are happening, especially with like going up to the heart of life, would it have been, even though it would have been like, since it would have been a secular state, it wouldn't have really been the Jewish state, but would have been better almost to have the state of Israel be somewhere else?
Well, that's an interesting point, but the Ramban, I think, would disagree. Now, the Ramban is not in favor of a secular state. The Ramban is not saying, let's have a secular state. Obviously, the Ramban would envision a Jewish state, but a religious state. But the Ramban does say Jews are not supposed to make a state anywhere else. Israel has to be the right state. So you're not going to take the position, well, if it's not going to be religious, we should make it in Uganda. You know, you can't make a Jewish state in Uganda. Yeah.
I heard in the name of Rabbi Gottlieb that he considered Argentina as well. Is that true?
That might be. I'm not sure. And again, as I say, from Herzl's orientation, his goal, and again, his goal was a decent goal. I mean, I'm not disparaging the goal. His goal was to solve, so to speak, the problem of anti-Semitism. So just get the Jews out of Europe. Now, by the way, as a little aside, and again, I'm not putting down even Herzl's kavana, because I think his kavana was he wanted to help the Jewish people in the way that he knew. But if you think that the establishment of a state of Israel reduced anti-Semitism in the world, that absolutely is not the case. Again, it's very unfortunate. But if anything, the state of Israel has increased anti-Semitism in the world, because Zionists are, Rahman al-Islam, are equated to Nazis and equated to apartheid and equated to racists. So it's very, very interesting that even in terms of Herzl's own goals, now there are many reasons to have a state of Israel, including the Ramban's Chiyuv. But to say that it was a solution to the anti-Semitism of the world is actually not true. And again, the Briska Rav, who was a big anti-Zionist, was alive. I mean, the Briska Rav died in 1960. The Briska Rav predicted back in 1947 that the State of Israel is not going to cause the nations to look at us more favorably. It will cause the nations to look at us with much, much greater hatred. Do you know there was a guy, a Jewish journalist, he wanted to make a point. He went to Berkeley campus, you know, big liberal campus, and he pretended to be an ISIS sympathizer. You know what ISIS is? ISIS are the terrorists that behead people and burn Arabs alive, even, just brutal, brutal, brutal people. And he was waving the ISIS flag on this college campus, and he was making a speech about ISIS stands for morality, and, you know, you have to understand the Islamic mindset. And people were walking by and saying, yeah, you're right, you know, maybe we ought not to judge people, you know, who knows who's right, who's, you know, the kind of moral relativity. Well, maybe from their perspective, you know, everything is fine. Okay, so the next day, he shows up with an Israeli flag. And he waves the Israeli flag and he starts making a speech. Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. And people walk by with ISIS, who burns people alive. And, you know, they, you know, nothing. Oh, that's right, maybe you got a point here. Israel says, you people are responsible, you know, the biggest mass murderers, you know, in the history of civilization. So it's amazing. I mean, you know, it would be funny if it wouldn't be tragic Israel, which, you know, when there's an earthquake, and again, even the Chilonim, because, you know, it's not only religious. I mean, when there's an earthquake in Nepal or a natural disaster, Israel sends 30% to 40% of the aid, like more than the United States, more than any other country in the world. Not just proportionally, I mean, in absolute percentages. Every, you know, when North Korea has famine, you know, and North Korea refuses to take help from Israel, they don't care if a million of their people die. But, you know, Israel sends aid to North Korea. We don't want it. So here you really have one of the most humanitarian countries in the world. Here you have a country where an Arab, now again, is there discrimination against Arabs? Yeah, Arabs are not treated the same as the Jewish citizens, although Jewish citizens aren't treated so great either. But the Arabs are treated a little worse. But the type of life an Arab can have in Israel is many times better than an Arab can have in any Arab country. Unless you're a sheik in Saudi Arabia, you know, unless you're a billionaire, whatever it is. But the average Arab in Israel has a much better life than the average Arab in Egypt or Syria or Saudi Arabia or Yemen. So if you'd be an Arab, you'd want to live here, and you pray to Allah that, maybe in your heart of hearts, that I hope this Jewish state lasts, because if it ever turns into a Palestinian state, they'll turn Israel into the Gaza Strip. I mean, what is the Gaza Strip like? You know, Israel disengaged from Gaza. There were fields and gardens and orchards. Now the place looks like a bombed out wreck. They just took a beautiful thing and they destroyed it. Yeah. Give him Israel, Rahman al-Islam, they'll do the same thing to the whole country. So if I would be an Arab, I would pray very, very much that the Palestinian state fails and never happens, because life is a lot better under Israel. It's just, you know, again, I'm not denying that there's some discrimination. That's very true. But still, things are much better. So, be it as it may, this is one of the almost miracles that no matter what Jews do in the world, the non-Jews hate us. Now, in some ways, that's a divine gift, because that reminds a Jew to learn and turn inward and try to connect to Torah, because you'll never be accepted totally by the outside world. This idea that you can't look at any other place as the Jewish home except Eretz Yisrael. Remember, I mentioned three. I didn't mention the fourth one yet. This idea is very, very important. The Shelah HaKadosh, you know the Shelah? The Shelah was Rabbi Ishaya Horowitz, and he wrote a huge mammoth sefer called Shnei Luchos HaBris. And it's a combination of Kabbalah, Halacha, Agada, a huge, huge, huge sefer. And he lived in the 1500s. He was the Rav of Frankfurt, and then he came to Yerushalayim when the Ashkenazic settlement was very tiny. But the Shelah HaKadosh criticizes the Jews in Golus who build stone houses, stone and brick houses. Because when you build a stone house, the implication is we're going to be here a long time. You should build your house of things that don't last so long, because you don't really believe you're going to stay. Now, I would just add, though, that I would make an exception for a Shul or a Yeshiva, because the Gemara in Megillah says that all the shuls and yeshivos of Chutz La'aretz are going to be uprooted and come to Eretz Yisrael, so I can build my brick yeshiva because it'll be here. But if it's a private house, now there's a problem. Now, Rabbi Beryl Wein, although this will be a kash on him, he said when he was building his yeshiva in Muncie, he started a yeshiva in Muncie, so somebody offered him, one of his supporters offered him timber, wood, special wood from Finland that apparently has an average life of 150 years. Most wood lasts between 75 and 100 years. This would have been like 150-year wood. And for the same price, so it would have, you know, made his building much stronger and long-lasting. But he said that, no, he says, you don't build a building in Gullus to last for 150 years because you're not allowed to assume you're going to be in Gullus that long. Now, based on what I just said, there's a little bit of a kasha, though, since it's supposed to be yeshiva, you know, it would come to Eretz Yisrael. So this is the idea that you don't look at anything else as the homeland of the Jew. Now, the fourth component, though, is the most important because that really hits you directly. Again, the three components I mentioned, conquer the land within the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, as described in the Torah. Number two, make the land habitable, not desolate, make it beautified, make it usable, and this could be in a lot of different ways, by living there, by cultivating it agriculturally, by industry, by parkland. Don't just conquer it and leave it like a dump. Make something out of it. The third is the psychological identification of Eretz Yisrael as our national home. And the fourth is the one that's most directly relevant to us as individuals. Unless we have a heter, and I'll discuss that, it's very important, we as individuals, according to Ramban, are halachically obligated to live in Eretz Yisrael. See, the first three things you can do from a distance. No, conquest is a duty on Am Yisrael. I don't have a mitzvah to be in the army per se, but we have to conquer. I can support it by money or by taxes or whatever it is. But the last one is very much an individual obligation. Unless I have a heter, and I'll discuss that in a moment, what is the heter? I am obligated to live in the land of Israel. In fact, when most people say there's a mitzvah called Yishev Eretz Yisrael, most people are referring to this last thing. But the truth is there are three other things as well. Now, one question you might ask is this. If Ramban says there's a mitzvah that is called Yishev Eretz Yisrael, why didn't the Ramban live in Eretz Yisrael till the end of his life? So here you need to know a little bit about the history of the Ramban. Rav Moshe ben Nachman, he lived in Spain, Barcelona, Catholic Spain at that time. Unlike the Rambam who lived in Islamic countries, the Ramban lived in Catholic countries. And the Ramban was regarded in the generation right after the Rambam, he was regarded as the Gadol Hador, and the whole Jewish world looked to the Ramban for guidance. He was both great in Halacha and great in Kabbalah. The Ramban was one of the first, this is way before the Ari, the Ramban was a great, great Mekubal. And he was living in Spain, he was living in Barcelona. But what happened was that there was a public debate. In those days they didn't have television, so people used to attend public debates and vote on who was the winner. And there was an apostate Jewish man who became a Franciscan friar. He went by the name Pablo Cristiani. And he wanted to debate with the Ramban regarding the idea that even in Judaism there is proof that Yashka, that Jesus is the Messiah and everything else. You know, the same things missionaries do today, taking different biblical verses out of context and bringing in different Gemaras, etc. And since he was semi-literate, he was a Jewish person who knew Hebrew, so he wanted to debate and convince people that Christianity is the true religion. So the Ramban was summoned to debate this, and the Ramban even wrote down a transcript of the debate. We actually have a Hebrew, and it's been translated into English, the disputation at Barcelona where the Ramban refutes the different proofs, etc., and he shows how the person either didn't understand or the person intentionally distorted, a very, very valuable little sefer. It's around 50 or 60 pages. So at the end of these debates that lasted for a few days, people would take a vote. They would vote, like, who is the winner of the debate? So we have, as they say, the expression, they have good news and bad news. The good news is Ramban was the winner of the debate, hands down. And even the Goyim said, Ramban made the most sense. Yay for Ramban. Bad news is, it was against the law to defame the Catholic Church. So Ramban was guilty of the crime of blasphemy against the Church, the punishment of which was exile. So the Ramban was ordered, he was in his 70s, he was ordered to leave Spain. So the Ramban was kicked out, and that is how he got to Eretz Yisrael. He left Spain, and he came to Eretz Yisrael, and he lived his last years, less than 10 years, he lived in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, he wrote his great Perish on the Chumash. The Perish of the Ramban on Chumash is second in Chashivas only to Rashi. Rashi and Ramban are considered, by common agreement, to be the two greatest Meforshim on the Chumash. And the Ramban wrote his Perish in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, it's interesting that the Ramban even uses Arabs for local archaeology. It's very fascinating. There's a machlokes, Rashi and Tosfos. What is the silver content of a shekel? We know that a shekel is very important. You have to give a half shekel to the Beis Hamikdash every year. Pidyon HaBen is measured in terms of five shekelim, not our shekelim, but five shekelim. So what is the weight of silver, right? How much silver is it? Because a shekel is not a coin like a shekel here, it's a weight of silver. So there's a machlokes, Rashi and Tosfos, based on a sugya in Maseches Bechoros. How do you compute? Now, neither Rashi nor Tosfos ever saw an actual shekel. They're just trying to reconstruct it from discussions in the Gemara. So the Ramban writes, very, very fascinating, that when he got to Eretz Yisrael, he bought an old shekel coin from an Arab peddler who was selling these old ancient coins, you know, ancient from the time of the Beis HaMikdash. And he weighed the coin very, very carefully. And he was machriya that Rashi was correct. He says that Rashi sheet is correct because that is the weight of the coin that he actually saw. So you see that the Ramban was willing to consider what you might call archaeological evidence in determining what halacha was. So Rashi knew it through like Ruach HaKodesh. Rashi never saw a shekel. Rashi couldn't weigh the shekel. Rashi learned Gemara's that way, and it turned out that the Ramban says Rashi was correct. But the question, and the Ramban also writes, in fact, in the Old City, I don't know if you've been there, it's near the Chorva. The Chorva now is the beautiful, beautiful shul. It's called Chorva because for 200 years it was desolate. But near the Chorva, there's another little shul that is called Beis Knesses of the Ramban. And the Ramban actually started a shul in Yerushalayim. And it's not the same building, but it is the oldest shul. In other words, it's been continuously in operation, except for the years between 48 and 67. Except for those 19 years, it's a continuous shul from the 1200s. That's how it is. The Ramban writes in a letter, there's a famous Ramban. We know that the Ramban wrote a famous letter of Musar and modesty called Igeres Ramban. But he also wrote a letter to his family about his coming to Eretz Yisrael. And he says that the land was so abandoned and so empty, very, very few Jews, that he said that the holier the place, the more abandoned and desolate is the place. Yerushalayim was more desolate than anywhere else. The Temple Mount was so desolate. You know, the Kotel, if you could imagine the Kotel. The whole area of the ground was covered with garbage and refuse and manure. The Kotel popped up maybe, let's say, 5 feet from the ground. Imagine, so you're standing, how high is the Kotel? Not even now, only half of the Kotel is above ground. The bulk of it is underground. But imagine the ground level being like 200 feet higher. And all you have is this little thing, it's filled with garbage and this and that. And this is what it was. And the Ramban says, we could not even get a minyan for Rosh Hashanah in Yerushalayim. We had to get like some people from Hebron and some people there. There were not 10 Jews in Yerushalayim. Now, where were Jews living? There was a Jewish settlement, actually, from even before the Ramban. Balei HaTaisus from France. A number of people went up. But for various reasons, they were living in a city that's not so Jewish today. Akku was on the coast. and that was Christian controlled, and that was a little better than the Muslim cities. And the main Jewish community was not going. The Ramban spent Rosh Hashanah in Akko, and he gave a famous drasha on Rosh Hashanah that we have as well. But the question I'm raising, this was just a long biographical introduction. By the way, an interesting question is, where is Ramban buried? The Ramban died in Eretz Israel. Now, the Rambam didn't die in Eretz Israel. The Rambam died in Egypt, and he was buried in Eretz Israel, and all of us know where the Rambam is buried. The Rambam is buried in Tiberia. Why Tiberia is also a good question. If you're going from Egypt to Eretz Israel, you hit the area of Yerushalayim way before you hit Tiberia. That's a good question. Why Tiberia? But at least we know where the Rambam is buried. The Ramban lived in Eretz Israel, and he died here. But we don't really know where the Ramban is buried. It's an amazing thing why the kever of such a gadol. I mean, people have different speculations, etc. But we do not have a definitive location of the kever of the Ramban. Now, all of this is a long digression. I simply want to ask this question. If the Ramban says that living in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah min haTorah, and if the Ramban says it applies even when there's not a Beis HaMikdash, b'chol eis v'chol shah, then why did he not move to Eretz Yisrael until he was kicked out of Spain? Right? He came there solely because he had to. What was his heter according to his shita? So again, we don't know for sure, because he never said why he wasn't living there. But there are a few possibilities. Possibility number one is that in those days, the travel to Eretz Yisrael was literally a very life-threatening voyage. You had to go through deserts, through oceans. There were pirates, there were wild animals, there were people that would attack you. And therefore, like anything else, the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is not one of the big three. You're not mechuyev to take a trip to Eretz Yisrael if it's going to be pikuach nefesh. Now, people abuse that. People say, oh, well, you know, there's terrorism and this and that. Well, yeah, but the truth of the matter is, Baruch Hashem, and it should continue, Bizman Hazeh, with everything that goes on here, this is safer than the United States. So, yeah, things can happen everywhere. But you can't say, I'm not going to leave New York because it's pikuach nefesh to live in Eretz Yisrael. If anything, it's pikuach nefesh to live in New York. So one has to be careful. Israel is a safer country. I mean, where in the United States are you going to see an 8-year-old walking around 11 o'clock at night? I don't know why they're walking around 11 o'clock at night, but you see little kids walking around. It can be done. I'm not saying it's advisable to do it, but it can be done. Girls can walk around more or less in Yerushalayim, provided, you know, the right neighborhoods and the like. In America, that's almost, you know, in almost any place, that can't happen. So to say pikuach nefesh today, I think, is totally wrong. But in the Ramban's time, there was a real concern. It was a life-threatening trip. And once you're in Eretz Yisrael, it was pikuach nefesh. So that might be one heter. Another heter would be, as you might call the indispensable heter, and that is that if you are the gadol that the whole Jewish world depends on, so you have to be where the people are. There were many, many Jews in Spain, and France is right next door, etc. And the Ramban could not abandon his people. Now, today, it's a little different. Sometimes rabbis still use this heter. They say, I can't leave because my community needs me. But number one, well, we'll see. I'll talk more. I'll talk about it tomorrow. Number one, not everybody could say they're like the Ramban, that's for sure. But number two, today is a different situation because of email, because of telephone, because of Skype, because of all of these things, because of relatively easy travel, it's shaykh for a person to be a gadol or a posek for America, even from Israel, just as it's possible for someone to be a posek from America to Israel. So this idea that if you go to Eretz Yisrael, you're cutting yourself off from the people that need you, that's less of a powerful idea then. But in the Ramban's time, that was very real, because there was virtually no communication from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. It would have taken months and months and months and months, etc. So Mimela, the Ramban was needed. So it's a bit of a mystery, but be it as it may, this is why the Ramban, this may be why the Ramban did not come to Eretz Yisrael, although the Ramban basically holds it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. Now, you'll notice though, when I mentioned this fourth component, What I said was, unless you have a heter, you must live in Eretz Yisrael. So the $64,000 question is, what are the heterim not to live in Eretz Yisrael? So basically, the big three, besides the indispensability argument of the Ramban, and I mentioned that, and I mentioned Pikuach Nefesh, right? But Pikuach Nefesh is not really a valid heter today. But the big three heterim, which we'll have to explain in more arichas, is a person is allowed to leave Israel, and Kal V'chomer, he doesn't have to come, if it's necessary to find a wife, Lisa Isha, if it's necessary for the learning of Torah, and the third, if it's necessary for a Parnassa. Right, those are the three heterim, but each of them have to be explained and how they would apply in modern times. Right? So it's Lisa Isha, Lilmo Torah, and Sorich Parnassa. Now, we're going to see that the poskim do say this is a little broader than it, literally it might be, but basically, according to Ramban, you must live in Israel unless you can shoehorn your matzav into one of these different categories. But again, what we'll talk about tomorrow, what those categories are. Now, let me point out that this is only 50% of the equation. This is explaining Ramban's Shita. Rambam, although he does praise the holiness of Eretz Yisrael, does not count living in Eretz Yisrael as a positive mitzvah. So, if you ask yourself, what is the heter of Jews to remain in Chutz La'aretz if they don't have Lisa Isha, Lomo Torah, or Parnassa? The answer is, the Nesivos wrote 250 years ago, that they are somech on the sheet of the Rambam. So like the Rambam, you can live in Chutz La'aretz. Like the Rambam, you're not mechuyev. It's the Ramban that says you are mechuyev. But who says we paskin like the Ramban? Right? This is a heter that somebody might have. But I will tell you that the Vilna Gaon himself says, it's a davar pashut, that the halacha is like the Ramban. That there's a mitzvah, and as you know, the Vilna Gaon himself tried to come to Eretz Yisrael, but for reasons that are still very mysterious, he turned back after leaving. The Talmidim of the Gra say that the Vilna Gaon was the Gilgal, was the reincarnation of Moshe Rabbeinu in his knowledge of the Torah, and just as Moshe Rabbeinu was not permitted by Hashem to enter Eretz Yisrael, the Vilna Gaon was not permitted. But the Talmidei Agra considered themselves Yoshua ben Nun, and as a result, they were zochet to come. And as you know, they were the nucleus of the Ashkenazic Yishuv. They were Sfaradim beforehand of Yerushalayim, and that is why, to this day, many of the minhagim of the what is called the old Yishuv, the Yerushalmi minhagim, are based on the Gra. Just a simple example. Right, we don't say Friday nights. We don't say V'shomru v'nei Yisrael es haShabbos, which most Ashkenazic and Sfaradim shuls say, but they don't say it here because the Gra held that those Hosafas were a hefsek. Now, duchening every day is an interesting historical thing. The Rama says that the minhag of Ashkenazim is not to duchen every day, only on Yom Tov. So why do we duchen every day? Sfaradim duchen every day, but why do Ashkenazim duchen every day? So this is very interesting. The shita of the Gra was that duchening should be every day, even in Chutz La'aretz. But every time he wanted to do it, the shul burnt down. But min haShemayim, they didn't let him do it. So when his Talmidim came, they said, maybe we'll steal this minhag from the Sfaradim, because that way we will be doing what our Rebbe wanted to do at Chutz La'aretz. So the origin of duchening among Ashkenazim every day is they took the Sfaradic minhag because the Vilna Gaon held that that would have been proper even in Chutz La'aretz, but he was unable to do it. Now, this is not throughout Eretz Yisrael. There are places in Eretz Yisrael, in the Galil, where they do not duchen every day. For example, in Tzfat and Tveria, they only duchen on Shabbos et Mincha, which is interesting, because in Chutz La'aretz there's no such cheshbon. In Chutz La'aretz, we duchen only on Yom Tov. In Yerushalayim, we duchen every day, Ashkenazim. Tveria, it's in between. They have a new thing. They only duchen on Shabbos for the Musaf. But that's because the Yishuv of Tveria were not the Talmidei Hagra. The Yishuv of Tveria were Hasidim from Galicia, Poland. So where did they get the Shabbos thing? That's the Kasha. But they came with the Hanaga that you limit duchening. You don't do it every day. Okay, so tomorrow we'll go vayik with this. I want to discuss the Heterim according to Ramban and the implications of the Ramban Shita.